What's up, everybody? Welcome back to TMT Time, a podcast put on by the Technology, Media, and Telecommunications Group here at Arnold and Porter. I'm your host, Evan Rothstein. Today, I have a first-time ever co-host, former guest, Yosh Eisbart. Yosh, what's up, man? Welcome to be my co-host on this edition of the TMT Time podcast.
Giddy up, Evan. Let's get after it.
And we have a third person on today's podcast, the actual guest, the former CIO of the state of Colorado. That, of course, is Eric Matizek. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Evan. Really excited to be here with you and Yosh and just having an awesome, awesome chat.
All right, Yosh, why don't you get us kicked off? And Eric, why don't you first tell us a little bit about yourself? CIO, you are now the CEO of Highwing, which is a startup. You are one of the few startup gurus, the startup gurus in the state of Colorado, of course, because you started up Startup Week Colorado or Startup Week Denver. So there are a few people that know more about the scene here in Colorado, but startups in general. So Eric, with that introduction, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, Evan. Appreciate that. First and foremost, I would say that those of us in Colorado know that there's not any one person that builds much of anything. It's a huge collective effort by just awesome founders, awesome investors, amazing community leaders. And I've felt blessed over the last 15 years to be really part of an amazing growth movement in Colorado as we've really emerged as the innovation hub between the coasts. My Colorado story starts at birth, born, raised, never left, never filed income taxes or had an address outside the state. My undergrad is here. All the companies I've been part of are here. I've been in the Denver startup community since 1999. I've been through all the ups and downs three plus times, and I've just seen some amazing companies and organizations built over that course of time. Most importantly, I'm a founder's founder. I love helping founders with big audacious goals and big dreams try to figure out how they can create value through building their business and building amazing teams. And I've been fortunate enough to be part of five companies from inception, always as a founder or working for founders. So my entire orientation towards building businesses is from the cockpit. So that's a little about me. And my current project is Highwing. We're reinventing kind of 200-year-old insurance industry, trying to take email, which was invented in the early 90s, out of the equation, which somehow is still used heavily for commercial transactions in the insurance industry. And we're on a quest to build a platform to make it easy to connect markets, carriers, and insureds to buy insurance faster.
That's awesome, Eric. And thank you so much for taking the time out of your wackadoo schedule to spend time with us. Not only do I consider you a friend and a mentor, but I really believe strongly that you truly embody what Colorado startup world and the ethos of who we are and what we do and how we collaborate and how we're different. You really embody that. So with that, I'd love to hear from you. I mean, you chief innovation officer for Governor Hickenlooper and now Senator Hickenlooper. You started Denver Startup Week with Tammy. You've been through multiple startups. Right now you're grinding it out and you just raised as well with Highwing. I mean, out of control, everybody knows you. I mean, you're kind of the Pied Piper of Colorado IT. What do you think is really the difference or the DNA of the Colorado IT scene versus maybe other locales?
I think Colorado's always been deeply rooted in our Western heritage. Coors Brewing Company in the early on in the 1900s. When you think about like the big telecom boom that really centered Colorado on the map, when you think about the oil and gas boom, I mean, we've had these ups and downs with really big industries over the course of our time. And in the last 20 years, the story's really been around technology and innovation. And most recently, just large scale, software companies building really big presence here in our state. But I think the story around our community that's different is that, when you're always trying to catch up to first place, I think there's just a much more collaborative and communal effort in the way that we compete and the way that we engage with you know, our fellow founders and our fellow leaders here in the community. And everything we've done is side by side, shoulder to shoulder to build a great community, which in fact builds great businesses, which in fact, you know, builds great investment companies. And I think there's just a lot of cheerleading, of a lot of pats on backs and a lot of shoulder to shoulder work. And I think, you know, Colorado leaves the ego at the door in most everything that we do. I think that, you know, as we continue to grow, it's really important for us to keep an eye on that, you know, communal generosity, you know, spirited engagement of how we treat one another and build businesses in our community. And I think that really defines us.
So let me ask you a follow-up question on that, Eric, because I've noticed there's been a lot of outside investment and outside investors coming into Colorado, in large part because of the efforts of building the scene here. How do you interact, or how do you talk to folks that are not from Colorado about that ethos that you're talking about joining and doing it together and building it here rather than being competitive with one another?
It's a really interesting question. I think over the course of the last couple of years, I definitely have felt different things happening in the community. And it's always been easiest for me to understand, like, those who are motivated by intrinsic motivators. So things that are very much, you know, selfless, versus extrinsically motivated, which are very much focused on self, or, you know, self-interest. And I think it's really easy to start to sort out the two. And I think, you know, as you grow, like, of course, you're going to have interactions with things that become more transactional than authentic. And I think for those of us who have been here, and I think for the founders that really drive and work to build companies here, I think it's a really big competitive advantage to keep that ethos alive. I think our employees and our companies certainly feel the generosity and the authenticity and the transparency and the way that we work shoulder in shoulder to build Highwing. And I would say the same about the amazing companies like Guild Education or Ibotta or Evolve Vacation Rental. Like, I know all those CEOs personally, and, you know, they spend more time helping and giving things away to make sure that their company is successful in the broader community than they do building it for themselves. And I think it's been a huge competitive advantage to their growth. And I just think that we've got to hold tight to it.
You know what? That made me think of something. One, you spoke to my Leadership Denver class when you were the CIO for HIC. So that actually, now I'm remembering that after hearing you answer that question. But two, this Workplace Act in Colorado that Polis signed into law about posting, you know, this equality of pay and posting the salaries on job postings. There's an article in the Journal last week or 2 weeks ago saying that there are companies, that non-Colorado companies, that are purposely not recruiting here because of the fact that they'd have to post the salary ranges. I'd be interested in getting your thoughts on how that's impacting the business community here and just your thoughts on that overall.
I think in the technology community, I think especially in software engineering and product, I think there's been a trend over time to have a lot of transparency in the leveling as it relates to those types of operations. And so I don't think it's foreign to a lot of technology and engineering related businesses. I do think that when you apply some of that thinking outside of a innovation or a technology economy, and you apply it to oil and gas, or you apply it to the nonprofit sector, and you apply it to a bunch of other areas, I think it's a new way and a new concept of doing business. And I think, you know, the vision around that was really around equality. It's really around access. It's really around the ability to drive transparency. And most importantly, as people are moving, you know, between jobs, to make sure that there's not a lot of discrimination around that work. And so I think the overall activity and the bill itself has incredibly good intentions as it relates to growing an equitable and accessible and unified workforce. I think that's incredible. But I do think there are certain companies that prefer to keep some of their recruiting processes and the way that they add team members to their teams a little bit more private. And I think you're going to see this tug and pull as Colorado starts to, you know, really deploy this. And I think you'll see other states, especially those that have deep technology and innovation economies, you know, likely start to explore the same things, because I think, you know, it's good to know that regardless of your gender or ethnicity or background, that you can be measured on skills. And I think that's the big breakthrough, is that how do we start to move the economy from paying people for the skills and the value of their work versus other attributes that can influence the way that we may or may not pay them. And so, again, super, super good intentions. I think we're really early, and I think it's just one to watch to see how the economy and how the community reacts to it.
Shifting topics a little bit, I mean, truly, Eric, folks know you within the IT community and definitely as a leader throughout the years of the different positions you've held and the businesses you've grown, and yeah, being the CEO of CTA, the Colorado Technology Association, as well. I think many folks, specifically within the startup scene, see you as Mr. Startup. They see you as Denver Startup and with the Denver Startup Week. For those people that have been under a rock for the last several years, can you give an overview of Denver Startup Week, what it is, what it's meant to be, and then perhaps how it's changed since it first started?
For sure. So this year is our 10th anniversary of starting Denver Startup Week in 2011. And this year, we're really, really excited to bring together not just the Front Range community, but, you know, globally entrepreneurs that want to learn about how to build the best small businesses they can through, you know, collective learning and thought leadership and sharing of skills, you know, predominantly virtual, but we'll start to do some more in-person work. For those who don't know much about Denver Startup Week, it was started in 2011 at the time with the vision of really starting to amplify the voice of Colorado and Denver's innovation story, specifically telling the stories of entrepreneurs and founders that were building companies in Denver, most importantly, showcasing Denver as a place to become the innovation and technology hub of the future, and then always being built around the direct needs of founders and those that are actually building companies in our great state. And so fast forward 10 years, minus the pandemic, last in-person event we had, it's the largest free entrepreneurial event in the world. We have 20,000+ people that attend online and in person. We usually hover between 300 to 400 sessions over a 5-day period, and the event itself is 100% free. So the intent is that it's accessible to anyone around the world that wants to build great companies, really stewarded by the leadership and the founders here in our community that are telling the story of building businesses here. And so excited for 2021, excited for our 10-year anniversary. And I think this year you'll see a lot more things starting to tell the story of the inclusivity, the diversity story of our city, the way that we are able to build and effectively scale companies across all sectors outside of technology and small business. And we're really excited to see what's going to happen here in October.
I think you're going to see actually me. I think I'm going to be on the panel. So I'm looking forward to telling my non-entrepreneurial, boring lawyer story to potential startup people, right, Yost? It's pretty boring because I'm a lawyer.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely non-riveting. I got a follow-up question, Evan. And by the way, I like how you plugged your Leadership Denver in there slyly.
Boom. Always got to go LD14, best class. Actually, I have a happy hour tomorrow.
And, LD06, most humble class ever. You can be best all day long, man. Take it. It's yours.
All right, we'll take it.
I never got accepted. So, Eric, you know, on the Denver Startup Weekend, a follow-up for that, outside of scale and relevance in the greater startup world, what changes have you seen? Have you seen that, pre-pandemic, that with, the coasts trying to find a more attractive place to live, and Denver or Colorado being one of those meccas, have you seen the DNA change? Have you seen the energy change around kind of what a startup means within Colorado?
I think innovation ecosystems always evolve over time. And I think that what you're known for in one chapter, and I go AKA back in 2011 and 12, the seismic activity was at Rally Software at the time, and a company called SendGrid that had just been recently funded had made this major decision to move out of Boulder to actually put their headquarters in Denver, Colorado. And people were like, oh my gosh, what? This is so big. Two Boulder companies moved to Denver. Like, the world is changing.
My mind's blown.
And we would always reference the last IPO in 2011 was like in the late 90s. A company that had been built in the accounting software space, JD Edwards, that was just like the story of Colorado in the world of technology and software that was bought by PeopleSoft. You probably know it well from your perspective, Yosh, but that was the story of IPOs, growth and innovation in software in Colorado for a decade. And so you fast forward to 2021, we had two IPOs last week, Inspirato and EverCommerce. We've got a bunch of IPOs that are in, kind of in the chamber. We've got a bunch of IPOs that have happened over the course of the last year. So you see this massive velocity of companies and growing to scale. So I would say that what the community needed a decade ago is dynastically different of what it needs today. The one thing that I'm closely watching and just trying to understand is that both as a CEO and as a community leader, talent is everything in building businesses. So like, you cannot build great companies without amazing human beings. And the biggest competitive advantage we had for a long time was when you're, you know, 40 to 50% the cost of living difference between downtown San Francisco or New York, you can live in Colorado for 3 to 5 years and you can buy your first home. You have all these abilities to ride public transit or commute within 15 or 20 minutes. Like, those are the pieces that I'm watching really closely as we emerge from the pandemic, because, you know, with the incredible run up in real estate and a lot of companies placing a lot of their employees here or their employees moving here and still working for those companies, it's really hard to tell what the impact is a year from now, because it's obvious that, a single time home buyers in Colorado, it's an entirely different landscape. It's obvious that the ability to hire talent at an arbitrage in Denver, Colorado versus 5 years ago or 7 years ago, I think it's at parity of San Francisco and New York. I just feel it as a CEO that it's like there's not a lot of economies of scale or arbitrage around the things that made us really, really, really popular. And I'm really curious to see how that settles out and how those other ecosystems either go up in value to still hold that kind of competitive advantage, or if we start to slide into one of the top 2, 3, 5 innovation centers in the United States. And so that's the big thing I think over the next year to 2 years you'll start to see the impact of.
That's actually a good point, because we used to have, we were a second tier market, if you will, to Silicon Valley or the rest in Virginia area or Boston maybe, and we had affordable housing. I just read this morning that the average sale price in the Denver area for homes was over $700,000, which is like almost double what it was probably when you were talking about when Rally Software and JD Edwards ruled the land. So
it was probably like 235, 240. Yeah. And then like over the course of the last six years, it kind of crested 500. And then the last year it went up to 745. So yeah, I mean, the home values have tripled. Median home prices in Denver have tripled in a decade, which, it's time these things happen, but it's a very different economy when, salaries have for engineers have not tripled in that same period of time.
Yeah. I say this all the time, like the salaries and the income have not increased locally as fast as the prices of real estate and even consumer goods. I mean, it's pretty nuts.
Yeah. So that's going to be the story. I mean, the next couple of years, I think we'll figure it out and we'll kind of see the impacts of it, but I'm hoping that, as things settle, that there'll be some silver lining in the way that these things all start to settle out, and that we still have some of those competitive advantages that allow us to be that incredible place to build a business, an incredible place to build a family, and an incredible place to build your asset base and your life. So I'm hopeful that that's all intact.
Well, both of you are currently building businesses in Colorado. Eric, I saw in the last 6 months have gotten a seed round, and Yosh, you're on the process and the path to doing so. So what are your collective, both of you, pitches sort of to potential employees or people from out of state that want to move here? What are the benefits today, given the changing landscape that Eric, that you just mentioned with pricing and competitive loss of some of those competitive advantages that may have existed a couple of years ago?
I can talk specifically on behalf of Highwing first. It's been interesting for us, going into the pandemic, we had, a 12-person office in downtown Denver, and we got together every day, and we had a couple of employees that, did some recreational work from home, prior to, call it March of 2019, 2020. And then when I look, today, we've just recently made the decision to be a company that has a headquarters in the cloud. We have given our employees the full capacity and discretion to figure out how they work and where they work. And as long as that, they are able to produce, and engage and, be part of the business, I think it's allowed us to invite, I've been saying employees from, Portland, Oregon to Portland, Maine. And, we've gotten employees in and around both and everywhere in between. And so, what was a very Denver centric, company, we've become a national, 20 person business that has employees around the United States. And so, we've tried to take advantage of areas where we've got the opportunity to, to allow people to stay where they are with great skills and participate in our company. And, you know, we'll see as, again, as the pandemic starts to wane and the economy starts to settle, we'll kind of see what we do. But I don't think that we're going to move away from a distributed strategy for a long time.
Yeah, my last company, Nimble, we had, by the time that I left, we had over 300 employees. My old school mentality pre-pandemic was a butt in a seat. I was there for the beginning of the pandemic, and I left before it ended. And we saw a tremendous productivity increase, and it was a change of mentality for me in regards to coming from the old school perspective and saying that the remote distributed can work. In my new startup, and you know, Eric, we're a couple steps behind you and raising seed as we speak, and our company's called Fulfilled, as you active listeners already know. We're employing a hybrid method, and so we do hire folks primarily from Colorado. Ironically enough, though, or not, the folks want to work mostly remote. That being said, we feel that the office environment is one where, you know, tremendous serendipity and creativity happens. And there's a lot to be said about discussion by the water cooler versus over Zoom. So I think the expression is productivity happens at the desk, creativity happens away from the desk. So I think our approach is we're going to have a central office, and we'll want to have folks in some capacity, but we're not going to mandate, nor could we even mandate with the new way of working, a butt in a seat 5 days a week.
So I got another question for, I suppose, both of you, but Eric, mostly for you, since you brought up the pandemic and the sort of changing workforce. One of Yosh and my favorite podcasters, Prof. G, always talks about the who won and who lost in the pandemic.
The dog.
Yeah. And one of the big winners, he said, is startups. The amount of startup activity during the pandemic like far outstripped the previous year. And I'm just interesting, throw the question to both of you. Why do you think that is? And do you think the trend will continue? And will those companies that started up during the pandemic, will they last?
The very beginning of the pandemic, there was a group of us that came together led by Brad Feld to launch an organization called Energize Colorado, with the entire mission was to reach out, engage, and help the small business economy work through the challenges and the pitfalls of the pandemic, and most importantly, be able to build programs and benefits that allowed them to recover to full strength. And what was really interesting is that throughout that process, I always said that entrepreneurship was the medicine for the economy. Like, it was the in a pandemic, the medicine for us to get better was to start things, was to build things. And some of those were nonprofits, and some of those were for-profits. Some of those, you know, were new programs and organizations. Like, there was just a massive of folks starting things. And I think the interesting thing just around access, Seth Levine just recently wrote a new book called The New Builders. And it's really a discussion and story of the next chapter of America. And when you look at the next chapter of America, when you have broadband access that's becoming more ubiquitous across the US, you have software and the boundaries of understanding how to build software with low code and no code tools. And you have web platforms that easy allow non-technology enabled humans to quickly be able to participate in the digital economy. It's no surprise that when you look at whether it's social media or e-commerce or building software companies, that there's been a tremendous amount of rise in activity, because at the same time, you've had a lot of opportunity to build new things in the wake of an economic downturn or an economic challenge. You've also had the ability to build things with limited amounts of knowledge and skills it took to build the same things a decade ago and surely 20 years ago. And so I think as you have, unified access around technology, broadband, participating in the economy, with ideas that make it easy for people to participate, I think we're going to continue to see a lot of activity in growing business over the course of the next few years. The ones who I think lost and are still recovering are service companies, restaurants, our small businesses, our dry cleaners, our liquor stores. Like if you run a small business in the state of Colorado, like my heart goes out to you, because I just think that in the sea of the downturn, it's been so hard to recover, even with all of the different stimulus activities and PPP and all these things that were helped to help people get through it. It's just not enough. And so, I look at small business in every single way as a state and as a community, we can continue to shop local, be local, engage local, help our small businesses, because those are the ones I feel that have had the biggest impact. And those of us in the digital economy have been able to stay at home with our computer and our cell phones and just kind of chug along. And so the inequity around digital access is real. And I think it's something we should all, have a keen eye to.
Piggybacking on that, and in terms of recommendations for young entrepreneurs, for folks that want to do startups, what are some of the key ingredients, whether Denver specific or other, that you think make the right DNA and the right opportunity for success?
I think, again, going back to Colorado and Denver specifically, I think when you have that idea or that thing that allows you to spring out of bed with passion and heart that you just want to go solve for the world, being in a place that's really receptive, providing feedback and engaging and talking through the ideas, introducing to folks that can help you, investors, really vet the idea from a product perspective. Like, I always think that's like gold in the beginning of starting a business. Like, I'm always looking for those who are saying no more than those that are saying yes, to really understand, what the risks and pitfalls could be in starting something new. But I think from a resource perspective, like, Colorado's become so rich in its access around those things. I think, having Techstars, having been born and built here in Colorado, and being really the sea change of incubators and investment around the world now, you've got a lot of those activities here in Colorado. When I look at the activities that are happening in Colorado Springs, there's an incredible incubator down there. There's an incredible program that's out of Fort Collins. There's multiple ones in Boulder. There's multiple ones in Denver. There's entrepreneurial hubs. So it's just like, if you dip your toe in the water and you are in the search of resources and feedback to build something great, we've never been more rich and glutton in the opportunity to provide entrepreneurs access to those things here in Denver.
So if you're not in Colorado and you're, in an engineering school or whatever, how is it that you can find people like yourself, for example, to seek out mentors or guidance? Where do you go? Where do you refer people to? How do you get active and involved to get the advice or mentoring that you may need?
Early stage, I think it's always really good to be in and around the universities. CU and DU and CSU all have really great entrepreneurial programs that are deeply involved, embedded in the community, that connect students and connect the community and connect entrepreneurs back to those universities at scale. I think I mentioned Techstars, as well as a bunch of the additional like coding academies, like Turing and Galvanize and others, that I think are always a direct connect to connect the engineering community to the opportunity to build businesses. And then you still have, incredible entrepreneurial groups like the Blackstone Entrepreneurship Network, which I know, Yosh, that you're a member of and been really familiar with over the years, as well as Denver Startup Week kind of being the hub on an annual basis. Both just being in the stream of that work, I think, is really, really opportunistic to be able to engage with folks. And then last, we've got some really great platforms that, tell the story of Colorado at scale, like Built in Colorado, that I think just kind of tells the story of all things that are happening here from an innovation perspective. And, in Colorado Inno, which is in partnership with the Business Journal here in the state, and the combination of that 1-2 punch, there's not a lot that gets left behind in terms of telling the story of the state.
All right, Eric, we are getting close to running out of time, so I'd like to do some quick hitters at the end. But before I get to some of the so-called fluff, we have a lot of lawyer listeners, or at least I hope we have a lot of lawyer listeners. How can you translate some of your entrepreneurial spirit to lawyers? Like, because a lot of us are very introverted or boring, and we don't know anything beyond the law. And it's hard to get young lawyers engaged in getting out of, I guess, now the house at this point. What are some thoughts you would like to share with some of the young lawyers about why it's important to go out and get engaged either in the community or with an entrepreneurial spirit?
Yeah, I'd be happy to share three. I think, you know, my business, High Wing, is really a story of lawyers could understand and make sense of. And we're really solving a paper problem in insurance. Like in 2021, the fact that insurance companies have to send and receive applications and documentation over email that are in unstructured or like PDF formats to be able to process and buy insurance, it's mind-blowing. And I think about my engagements with, my counsel as it relates to the work that we do. And I find that a lot of the work from a legal perspective is still on that same innovation curve. So I think identifying opportunities in the things that come across your desk, just realizing that there's software tools and there's things that allow you to impact change. And if you have that bug, it's easy to start to build software and tools to start to solve real problems within your own industry to even scratch your own itch. I think the second piece for me is that, you know, entrepreneurs really are telling the future story of our cities. And so I think as amazing service professionals that help entrepreneurs navigate building companies, which is, you know, I always say entrepreneurship is a special kind of sport. Those of us who are entrepreneurs, like we know the language, we know the call signs, like we know all the elements that are truly entrepreneurship. I think it's a competitive advantage for lawyers to be able to understand entrepreneurship, understand business building, understand what it's like to be in the throes of an entrepreneur's cockpit as it relates to building a business from scratch, and just be able to be empathetic around that. I think it'll make you better counselors. I think it'll make you better leaders. I think most importantly, over time, it will drive business. I think that entrepreneurs are always looking for the brightest minds to be able to help them through the most challenging opportunities and situations in business. And the more that incredible lawyers engage with them, it's just natural to start to collaborate and work together and build those companies together. So I think there's nothing but upside for the legal community to be involved in all things startup. And I hugely embrace firms like yours and a whole litany of other awesome ones here in Colorado that always step forward in helping build the community. And I just think, you know, those who take that forward step and really try to be generous with their time and their counsel and their expertise, it's going to come back tenfold to the firms and the associates that engage in that.
That's great. I love that. And I really appreciate your guidance on that. So, Eric, you gave us Seth Levine's The New Builder. What's another book you've read this summer that you would like to recommend to the listeners?
Most recently, again, another awesome Techstars book. Is a book called Levers by Amos Schwartzwarb. Awesome book. Really just breaks down kind of the components of how to really create repeatability and measurability in your business. That one's absolutely awesome. And trying to think what else. Those are two I'd give.
All right. What are you streaming on Netflix? Or one of the other ridiculous number of streaming services that we now have available to us.
This is an area that I would tell you that I'm a little bit of a prehistoric dinosaur. Like Netflix, TV, sitting in front of video is something that I spend a very little amount of time on.
Eric, stop lying. You're a gossip girl.
I'm not. If truth be told, I would be like probably the king of Trash Truck, which is an animated series on Netflix that my 5-year-old daughter loves to watch. And so I'm probably deep in children's animation. I'm probably deep in, all things Barbie. But outside of that, my Netflix is pretty limited.
All right. The last question. Where are you going on vacation this summer?
A chance kind of right coming out of the pandemic as things opened up here in May to spend a bunch of time at the beach. If there's anything to coming out of the chapter that we just went through, I think our family's deeply invested in, you know, shorter, higher frequency activities with those we care about the most. And I would just say our week and our summers are speckled with that. And next week, I think, really excited for the All-Star game to be in Colorado. I think Governor Polis and Mayor Hancock and all those involved in making that a reality, huge, huge spotlight on our state, on our baseball program. And most importantly, it's going to be awesome for all the kids to be able to see some of the world's best players right here in Coors Stadium.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you to you both. Maybe we'll get you back. Who knows? Carry on. Good luck with your startup company, High Wing Fulfilled. I hope you guys achieve what you're going for.